The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out if you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. Today is Tuesday, so it's time for the Dr. Peter Hammond show. So let's bring Peter up. Peter, are you with us?
I'm with you. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. And just for the details of this show, it is 10:02 a.m. here in London on Tuesday, August the 12th, 2025. The title of the show is The Real Story of the End of the Ukrainian War. So, Peter, where would you like to start us off with today's timely topic?
Well, we are, God willing, at the very end of the Ukraine war, and I think it's very significant and very historic that President Donald Trump of America and President Vladimir Putin of Russia are meeting in Alaska. Alaska, of course, is pretty much up on the roof of the world. It used to be a Russian province, actually, and under the Tsars back in the 1860s, Alaska was sold to America, and America wanted the territory, and Russia saw this as an Arctic wasteland and worth nothing, and were very happy for the few million dollars they got for it. And Russia could do with the money at that stage. And America was manifest destiny, reaching out as far as it could. And so Russia is just across the Bering Strait from Alaska. So this is an interesting point that they're not meeting in a capital. They're not meeting in the Middle East with some third party country. And, you know, Donald Trump's always interested in what's good for American economy. So instead of paying for something in the United Arab Emirates or something like that for the venue, they are going to host an American soil, and America's going to get the benefit of the cost of this summit meeting. But no Russian leaders ever visited Alaska. No czar, no commissar, none of the chairman of the Soviet Union. So this is the first time any Russian head of state is going to go to the previous Russian territory of Alaska, which is now one of the states in the United States of America. But it's not, they don't have to travel far from Russia. They just have to cross the Bering Straits. It's of course, most of us who've got a flat map don't quite see that point. But if you've got a globe, then you can see how Russia and Alaska are just across the border from one another. And that makes it a very striking spot. Now, knowing Donald Trump, that he likes winning and he won't back a loser, this is all very intriguing, because he's already said Zelensky's got to get ready to sign whatever he's got to sign to finalize this war and bring an end to it. And he's not going to keep backing a loser. And we know that Donald Trump openly detests Vladimir Zelensky. He sees him as a corrupt dictator and a thief of American tax dollars. And he's fed up with Zelensky's attitude of entitlement, that he expects a handout from everyone because he thinks the world owes him, and he's got this entitlement attitude, and that really angers and frustrates Donald Trump. The other thing is Donald Trump's rare earth deal with Ukraine is basically a non-starter, because I'm sure by now they know most of the rare earths in Ukraine are actually in Russian-held territory in the eastern part of Ukraine that has seceded from Ukraine and is in fact now part of Russia. They have had the referendums. They've formally aligned with Russia, and they've been part of Russia now for the last 3 years and are not interested in breaking away. Just to bear in mind also some of the history of this, that the war did not start 3 years ago in 2022. The war in Ukraine actually started back in 2014 when the American-backed U.S. aid-funded Maidan coup, the color revolution in Kiev and Ukraine, ousted the elected government, and in came the new Ukrainian government, which was Western-aligned. In fact, it was a creation of the U.S. State Department, USAID, and the CIA, and that's been pretty well proven, and it's no longer just a theory. So America paid $6 billion to finance the coup d'etat in Ukraine. This has come out from the USAID exposures, but also you had this U.S. State Department literally bought up the mass media in Ukraine, start their own radio and TV shows, and then they organized this coup d'etat. To call in Mexico or Canada, for example, and right in Russia's backyard. And after years and years and years of NATO expanding eastwards, taking Poland and getting Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, all of the old Warsaw Pact eastern countries aligned with NATO. And so Russia was feeling very threatened by this, and NATO, considering moving into Ukraine, was just the last straw. Now, bear in mind, this war could have ended a long time ago, and it's going to end much the same it would have, with the same results, and maybe worse results. They should have accepted the earlier deals. Bear in mind, Russia tried to join NATO itself. It tried several times, including 1999, 2008. There were attempts, and Russia was turned down flat. So Vladimir Zelensky is the latest American puppet in Ukraine. This is obviously a phony war. It's a proxy war. During the Cold War 1980s, the South African Army was fighting in Angola, and we knew that we were fighting the Soviet Union. The USSR was supplying all the weapons, all the training, and they were using Cubans and Angolan FAPLA forces in Angola as their proxies in a war against UNITA Freedom Fighters of Jonas Savimbi and the South African Defense Force. Now, we knew we were actually fighting Russia. It was their tanks, it was their MiGs, it was their multiple rocket launchers, stolen organs, and all the rest of it. That's what we were fighting against, and we knew the Cubans were just there as proxies for the Soviets, for the Russians. Well, in the same way, Ukrainians and Russians today understand the war in Ukraine is actually America and their NATO allies in Europe using the Ukrainians as their proxies in a war against Russia. And it's quite clear that the goal is to weaken Russia. And, of course, in many ways, Russia is stronger today than it was at the beginning of the war. And their army certainly has more combat experience, and their weapons have been battle-tested, field-tested, and therefore, in fact, all they've done is make Russia a lot stronger. So early in the war, there were attempts to be able to bring this war to an end. Within the first 2 weeks of the Russian invasion in 2022, there was an attempt to have a ceasefire, Minsk discussions in Turkey. And all Russia was demanding was that NATO be neutral militarily and politically, not join the EU, not join NATO, and that there's guarantees that no American military bases or weapons or missiles will be in Ukraine. And that would have been pretty easy to resolve early on. And they're going to have to accept all that anyway. And even Donald Trump said there's no way Ukraine's going to get out of this without handing over territory. And there's a lot of things we need to consider, especially if you're living in Donetsk region or in Luhansk. The war started back citizens, Russian-speaking, Russian ethnically, in the Donbass region, the eastern region of Ukraine, died at the hands of the Ukrainian military between 2014 and 2022 when the Russians invaded. And so if you're in the eastern region of Ukraine, and I've got friends there, I know missionaries who are in Ukraine, I know Ukrainians, I've got Ukrainian friends on the streets waving Russian flags, welcoming the Russian troops as liberators when it came in, because they'd been treated like dirt, like not just second-class citizens, but like the enemy by the Ukraine government. And many don't see it the way the media has been giving it to us. So if I can give some of our perspective that we've got from friends who are in Ukraine and friends who are missionaries in Ukraine, the Kiev regime of Vladimir Zelensky is very liberal. It's much like the U.S. Democratic Party, and just as corrupt. The Ukrainian government's pro-abortion, pro-LGBTQ. And whereas the Russian government of Vladimir Putin's pro-family and opposed to privileges for perverts, and the Russian government supports Orthodox Christianity, and yet Ukraine government is very much liberal, pro-LGBTQ, and so on. It was put quite well by the patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church, Patriarch Kirill, that America is waging war against any country that doesn't support the LGBTQ agenda or doesn't hold a gay pride march, is the way he put it. And this is interesting because the previous Ukrainian government, which was militarily and politically neutral and pro-Russian, actually, in terms of trade and other agreements, they were overthrown and they had laws in the old Ukraine against privileges for perverts, against grooming gangs and the whole LGBTQ agenda. And one of the first things that the American puppets who were installed off the Mayan coup of 2014 was they passed laws promoting LGBTQ, allowing the gay agenda in the schools and allowing grooming of youngsters into the homosexual agenda and so on. And then they passed laws forbidding Russian from being used as a language of education, even though much of Ukraine, especially eastern Ukraine, was ethnically Russian, linguistically Russian. So when a whole lot of Russian people living in Ukraine found that they weren't allowed to educate their own children in their own home language, many of them decided to secede. And you had Luhansk and Donetsk, the eastern Donbass region, seceding from Ukraine and getting bombed, rocketed, strafed, having missiles flown into their apartment blocks and their towns and civilian centers being under artillery and aerial bombardment and rocket bombardment. And so 14,000 Ukrainians were killed by, that's Russian-speaking Ukrainians in the eastern regions, were killed before the war officially started in 2022. So if you're living in the eastern Donbass region of Ukraine, you would say the war's been going 11 years, not three. And so that's the first thing to kind of realize, is that when the media tells us that Russia invaded Ukraine unprovoked, unprovokedly invaded Ukraine, well, it's unprovoked Russian aggression, let's say. Well, it certainly was aggression, but to say it is unprovoked is just propaganda and self-delusion, self-deception. Ukraine started the war really in 2014, or should we say the U.S. State Department and their proxy in Ukraine started the war back in 2014 while waging war against its Russian minority citizens. But bear in mind that the whole of the Donbass, Luhansk and Donetsk regions were always part of Russia and were only included in Russia by Stalin. That was really during the 1930s that that section of Ukraine, that section of Russia was included in Ukraine administratively. And then when you deal with Crimea, the Crimea was, of course, always part of Russia since Catherine the Great liberated it from the Turks. And that's back in the 1700s. So Crimea is ethnically Russian. It's linguistically Russian. And after the coup in 2014, Crimea had a referendum and chose to secede from Ukraine and go back to Russia. That's the will of the population. The population are ethnically Russian. They're linguistically Russian. they're religiously Russian Orthodox. They don't want to be part of Ukraine. And they legally seceded and joined with Russia back in 2014. Ukraine may not want to give up Crimea, but they don't have a snowball's chance in hell in keeping it. Crimea is part of Russia. It has been part of Russia for centuries. Crimea has been part of Russia longer than Hawaii has been part of the United States of America. And also, it's strategically important for the Russians, because Ukraine's got Russia's only ice-free port. Now, it's hard for us to relate, but Russia's, of course, tucked up there in the Arctic Circle, and most of their ports, like Murmansk and Vladivostok, are icebound for most of the year during the winter months. And we mean nothing can move because of the solid ice, the ice pack there. And Russia's only ice-free port is in the Black Sea from Crimea. And so Sevastopol, remember storming of Sevastopol, the Crimean War, back in the 1850s during Victorian England, the Charged Light Brigade, all of that into the Valley of Death Road, the 600. So all of that in the Crimea, Russia sees as super strategically important because it's the only port in the summer months that is ice-free, and even winter, that they can actually be having the Navy able to move during the winter months. So to expect Russia to give up Crimea is even more unreasonable than expecting America to give up San Diego, which is the headquarters for the Pacific Fleet of the U.S. Navy. But America's got a lot of ice-free ports and a lot of, should compare it like that. This is Russia's only access to the sea in the winter months. And so Russia's not going to give up Crimea. I mean, that's ridiculous. And the American president, Donald Trump, and his State Department have acknowledged that they recognize this as Russian, and Zelensky's just going to have to let it go. And remember, this goes, Crimea, going back to Russia, goes back to 2014 through referendum. But it's not only that, it's exactly what the population they want. So this war is coming to an end, and it has to come to an end. It could have come to an end a long time ago. It didn't even need to start. It's a real unnecessary war. We need to remember that
you still there, Peter?
That they won't put munitions, weapons, missiles, military bases in Ukraine. They also requested a meeting with Biden. President Putin requested a meeting with Biden back in January of 2022. No reply. They requested a guarantee for America in February 2022, a guarantee that Ukraine won't join NATO and that America won't have military bases or missiles in Ukraine. Ignored. And then came the Russian invasion. So the invasion in February 2022 was not unprovoked, it was not unforeseen, and it could have been easily avoided. And even then, within the first week or two, there were still options to agree to the neutrality of Ukraine, and Russia was promising to withdraw. There was even a time when Turkey managed to get both sides sitting down for negotiations. They reached an agreement, and they were about to sign. In fact, I believe the Ukrainians had already signed, and Boris Johnson stepped in and told the Ukrainians, no, you've got to keep fighting, this is not acceptable. And pressure was brought to bear by the US State Department, and both President Biden and the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, negated this agreement. And even though the Ukrainians had signed for it, the Ukrainians went back to war. And all the people who've died in this war, which is hundreds of thousands, not just of men, but also of civilians, on both sides, absolutely traumatic. I believe we were hearing from Colonel McGregor that the Ukrainian casualties are well over 800,000. It's probably pushing a million by now. And Ukraine's got serious, serious problems. They have got, at this stage, you can see the unpopularity of the war is so huge that the Ukrainian people will definitely not vote for Zelensky when there's another election. Now, he is probably an illegitimate president by this stage because he was voted in for 5 years and he's been in for longer than that. Bear in mind, Vladimir Zelensky got elected in Ukraine, even though he had no political background. He is just a perverted comedian who would do all kinds of bizarre things. He was an actor and a comedian. As somebody said, what's the difference between Zelensky and Biden? Well, Zelensky's a comedian and Biden's a joke. And so he has not been respected from the beginning. He ran on a platform of good relations with Russia and avoiding conflict with Russia. And when he got into power, he went into full resistance to Russia. So he has violated his tenets and betrayed his voters. And right now, Zelensky is so unpopular, he's got no chance of winning any re-election. And that's why he doesn't want the end of martial law. And therefore, he's pushing for the war continuing, because he will probably not only be thrown out, he'll probably be arrested for all the corruption. If he was investigated for corruption, he'd be in prison the rest of his life. So it's believed that if Zelensky doesn't run, he would have to leave Ukraine or risk violence against himself and his family. There's the hard right nationalists who already feel betrayed by Zelensky, and there's everyone else who feels abused and stolen from by Zelensky. So Ukraine's already having mass military desertions. Men are resisting being conscripted in the army, and mothers and relatives are literally attacking the recruiting officers. There's even cases of Ukrainians sending out the details of where the recruiting officers are and asking the Russians to please bomb them. And people rejoicing and celebrating the streets when a recruiting office in Ukraine has been hit by a drone strike or by a missile from Russia. So Zelensky's between a rock and a hard place, between Scylla and Charybdis, between the devil and the deep blue sea. What we're seeing is in Ukraine, Zelensky's unpopular. The war is super unpopular. The corruption is so rampant that, and the Ukraine government has been so corrupt as to even close down the institution that's meant to investigate corruption in Ukraine and making sure they don't have the autonomy to be able to investigate government corruption. So, and that was required by the EU in order to receive support, financial support from the West. So the situation is pretty bad. And Russia's already taken Luhansk, and 70% to 80% of the territories in the seceded provinces in the Donbass eastern region of Ukraine. So it's quite plain that Ukraine's got no chance of getting those territories back. Russia's not going to be handing back territories that seceded and which have been liberated almost entirely by the Russians. And so what you're seeing right now is the inevitable end of the war. And the fact that President Vladimir Putin and President Donald Trump are ready to meet, and meeting in a very significant territory of Alaska, again, reminding one of the fact that their territories that were exchanged in the past, the fact that Russia first settled Alaska doesn't mean that they have a claim on Alaska now. Alaska is American territory. So I think even the symbolism of having this on American territory, which used to be Russian territory, sends a message right there. And Donald Trump has made it clear he doesn't respect Zelensky. Zelensky's illegitimate. He hasn't had an election. Does he even have the right to decide whether to end the war or not? When is he going to have elections? He should have elections. And so there's all of that side. There's the huge amounts of corruption. Even Zelensky admitted at one point that they don't know what's happened to $100 billion of the $300 billion that the Americans have given to them. There's huge amounts of corruption going on in Ukraine. Much of the weapons that America's provided are being resold on the open market, even to terrorist regimes and illegitimate groups of violent revolutionaries. And the corruption is so huge. Ukraine is known as incredibly corrupt. And Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries in the world, and certainly the most corrupt in Europe. And the Biden and Pelosi family's involvement in that corruption is well documented. At one point, Vice President Joe Biden, as he was then, boasted that he had pressured the Ukrainian government to fire the attorney general, who was attempting to investigate the company his son was involved in. And he had threatened to withhold $1 billion US dollars in aid. until the Attorney General was fired. And this was done within a matter of hours, and he boasted this publicly. Now, according to a CBS News documentary, less than 30% of the billions of dollars of military aid sent to Ukraine actually ends up in the front line of the conflict. Most disappears and is sold in the illegal arms trade, often finding its way to terrorist-supporting regimes, and doubtless to the financial benefit of government officials that Zelensky's government is made up of. Zelensky's personal wealth seems very excessive for a comedian turned president very recently, although I must say he's a pretty good actor. And Ukraine, by the way, has some of the largest numbers of women trafficked into the sex slavery industry worldwide. We've even seen them trafficked as far as Cape Town. Now, this happens when there's wars. The men are conscripted. Their fathers are far from home. They don't have their parents looking after them. Many have been dispersed. Mothers might have fled as refugees across the border into Western Europe. They might be in Poland, who knows where. And these girls are desperate. In many cases, they are targeted for traffickers who offer them good jobs. And we know some of these trafficked girls have ended as far as Cape Town, South Africa. Our ministry was involved in helping to get some of them rescued by the vice squad here in Cape Town. They were promised jobs as models or in the entertainment industry or in restaurant work here in Cape Town, South Africa. Their passports are taken away from them. They brought here where they can't speak the language, so they have trouble communicating with people. They're told to be afraid of the police because they're here illegally and they don't have their passports with them. Many are brutalized and gotten addicted to drugs, and that's where we tried to rescue them. There was a group in Cape Town called the House of Rasputin, and many Ukrainian girls were there, effectively trafficked to be prostitutes in a faraway place, far from home, far from anyone able to look after them. The government doesn't care, and the government is totally corrupt and may be involved with the traffickers. Their parents are either dead or dispersed, either on the front line in the case of the father or a refugee in the case of the mother. And these girls are vulnerable. And maybe that's what the trafficking groups want, that they like wars that destabilize countries and leave a lot of orphans and a lot of vulnerable girls that can be trafficked. And not just girls, but boys as well. So we can see the United States Department of Defense was maintaining a whole lot of biological warfare laboratories, research facilities in Ukraine, where their personnel actually enjoyed diplomatic status, where the Ukraine government actually had no jurisdiction. And few of these laboratories would have had the required safety criteria to undertake the kind of dangerous research that they were doing. And so in June 2022, the Pentagon confessed to funding 46 biological research facilities in Ukraine over the previous 20 years. And there were revelations by Russian investigative committees published. And when serving as a senator for Illinois, Barack Hussein Obama helped negotiate a deal to build a biological research laboratory in the Ukrainian city of Odessa. And that was Metabiota, a company financed by Hunter Biden's own government agency. He had a Seneca partnership. And this was also run in partnership with the Communist Party of China and the People's Liberation Army. And they were in relationship with Hunter Biden's company. They were awarded $18 million federal dollars in a contract for the DTRA in Ukraine. And America provided over $350 million to fund 1,800 projects for the Science and Technology Center in Ukraine. That's the STCU, where American personnel worked under diplomatic cover in Ukraine without interference or supervision by the Ukrainians. So this is a totally avoidable war, and that's why it's got to come to an end right now. A friend in Ukraine sent me a letter saying, the war in Ukraine will end when people stop making money out of it. And I think that's true. There's a lot of people making a lot of money out of the Ukraine war, and when the funding stops, the war will stop. And I think that's what's happening now. The funding is coming to a stop. America is getting sick and tired of funding this war. Not just President Trump, but the whole MAGA base is fed up and sick and tired of funding this war. There's no more ground support in America. Even the media is getting lukewarm on this. And there are leaders in the Congress who've always been war hawks supporting the war, like the famous Lindsey Graham, who has never found a war he didn't like, but even he's saying it's time for the war to end and America can't continue to fund it. So I think on all these levels, you can see it's coming to an end. Russia can defeat Ukraine on a battlefield and has consistently done so despite all the mass media lies. The amount of garbage and propaganda we have seen in the mass media, virtually every single day, not just every week. You know, another great Ukrainian victory, you know, Putin about to fall and Ukrainians on the march and winning and the Russians are losing and the Russians are so, their morale so low. And it's the exact opposite of what's going on. And we've had American military advisors and observers like Ritter and Colonel McGregor saying what's really going on the ground. And yet the mass media has been giving us a nonstop diet of Russian losses and incompetence and bad morale and Ukrainian victories, which we know is not true. If it was true, the war would be over in the other direction by now. But the Russian forces have taken huge sections of Ukraine, especially in the eastern Donbass region, with the Russian majority population that doesn't want to be part of Ukraine, which has voted to secede. So you can see the war is at the point where, not saying the war couldn't continue, but it must stop now because the funding is going to stop. People are getting fed up. The American taxpayers are no longer willing to foot the bill, and they have forked out hundreds of billions of dollars into this worthless no-win war. And Russia has won on the battlefield. And as Donald Trump said to dictator Zelensky, you have no cards and you're playing with World War III. So the only way to have a guarantee of a Ukraine's safety in the future is for Ukraine to agree to a ceasefire peace treaty where they will be neutral, they will not join NATO. And, you know, politics is the art of the possible. And a great leader should know when to stop. And the Lord said that when you go to war, you must first sit down and see if you can win. And there's no way that Ukraine can win this war. There's no way that NATO can win this war through Ukraine. And the Americans aren't interested in continuing to fund it. So that means this war is coming to an end. And I think what we're going to see at Alaska at the end of this week is going to be much bigger than just talking about Ukraine. I think it's going to be absolutely huge results because I don't think Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin would risk their credibility in this public meeting if they hadn't already behind the scenes agreed on a lot of very positive things economically, politically. And of course, the big obstacle is the Ukraine war. So the Ukraine war has got to stop. The American funding of the Ukraine war has got to stop. And Russia will agree to that if they're going to get sanctions lifted and a whole lot of good trade deals going with America. The Russian forces have control over the rare earth minerals anyway, and it is pointless to keep backing Ukraine. They have no cards. They have lost the war, and pumping in more money is just going to result in more people dying. So I think at the end of the week, we're going to get to the point saying, well, why didn't they just agree to this a few years ago? Back in 2022, they could have had this agreement in Turkey. They did sign an agreement, and people like Boris Johnson and Biden sabotaged the peace treaties and forced them to keep fighting. This has doubtless made some people very rich. Zelensky and some American military industrial complex manufacturers, in addition. A lot of corrupt politicians in Washington and in Europe as well, I'm sure. But the people on the ground have been suffering. We've got a saying in Africa that when the elephants fight, it's the grass that gets injured. And it's true. When the elephants fight, the grass gets trampled. And the people on the ground are getting trampled by this war. It's affected and hurt a lot of people, and the sanctions have hurt a lot of people. And the Biden administration committed the worst eco-terrorism ever seen in Europe with the blowing up of the Nord Stream pipelines in the Baltic Sea, which created huge amounts of pollution. Who knows how much marine life death, absolutely shocking, disgusting, hideous nonsense going on during this war. It's time for the war to come to an end. And I think this is what the Friday meeting in Alaska between the American and Russian presidents is aimed to resolve. So I think there's a lot we can be grateful for. But we need to bear in mind there's all kinds of historic context that we need to remember, and the poor Ukrainians have suffered a lot over the years. Remember, Ukraine was actually liberated in the First World War, and their independence was established in the Brest-Litovsk Treaty, signed by Germany with Russia, which ended the war on the Eastern Front. And it was sadly the Versailles Treaty that gave Ukraine back to the Soviets and betrayed them. And then in the interwar period, Ukraine was heavily devastated by genocidal campaigns by Joseph Stalin and his Holodomor, his hunger genocide, where they starved the Ukrainians to death, invading the Ukrainian farms, confiscating the farms. And this has been well documented in the in many documentary films, but also the dramatic film The Bitter Harvest, which was an excellent expose of how Russia, under the Soviet Union, destroyed the Ukraine with the hunger, Holodomor, the hunger famine, the hunger plague is the exact translation of it. And so there's also a documentary, Ukraine on Fire, which gives the historic background to this revolution coup d'etat that took place in 2014. And to understand that the Eastern Russia, the Eastern Ukrainians who speak Russian, 90% of them being ethnically Russian, and are not willing to have their children educated in something other than their home language, it just shows there's no way that Ukraine has any realistic chance of defeating the Russian military, which is 10 times larger than their own forces. This is an unwinnable war. And rather than trying to subjugate nations which are not historically, demographically, or linguistically Ukrainian, but which are historically Russian, demographically Russian, linguistically Russian, and who are trying to join with Russia and secede from Ukraine, why would one continue to push this, getting a agenda for those who want the privileges for perverts and who want to be able to groom kids and who want to be able to ban the Russian language and align themselves with NATO and allow American missiles and biological warfare laboratories on their territory. The fact is, hundreds of thousands have died, hundreds of thousands have been displaced, millions have been displaced, and must hundreds of thousands more people suffer before the inevitable is acknowledged. And so our Lord said in Luke 14, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest after he has laid the foundation and he is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to mock him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going to make war against another, does not first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him, comes against him with 20,000? Or else, when the other one is still a long way off, he will send a delegation and ask for conditions of peace." And so our Lord warned us, blessed are the peacemakers, and do not start a war that you cannot win. And negotiation is a far better way than just throwing lives away. And you're seeing an entire generation lost in so many different ways. And the Ukrainian people don't want to be conscripted. They are resisting conscription, and they are literally fighting. Civilians and mothers are fighting against the Ukraine army conscripts on the streets as they're literally trying to drag young people into their vans and wagons as they take them off. And we even had the case of a Ukrainian citizen being beaten to death in a Ukrainian army training base after being forcibly recruited against his will. And there's so many neighbors of Ukraine who've now had enough, Ukraine and Slovakia being only some of them. And what Zelensky's been doing is so unpopular, and he has no chance of winning an election in Ukraine. He might want to drag out this war for as long as he can to enrich himself with even more millions, but honestly, when is enough enough? This man is greedy for sure, and he's enjoying the adulation, the hero worship, and the media attention, and the fact that the EU is willing to use him. But it's not good for his population. It's not good for his people that he's meant to be representing. So I certainly hope and pray that President Donald Trump and President Vladimir Putin come to a good, solid agreement that will bring about lasting peace in Ukraine, because this has been devastating. We've seen a generation wiped out in this senseless war, and the Ukrainian government has not been treating their soldiers well. They've not been using and conserving their lives wisely. They've been squandering them sometimes on just political attacks, which were not militarily wise, but were politically expedient, and which were absolute no-win campaigns that they had no hope of winning. So right now, there are masses of huge graveyards in Ukraine, and then there's memorial walls for the many bodies that they could not recover for burial. And you can see the popularity of the war is at the all-time lowest. There's no interest in the war. There's no morale in Ukraine left. I think this is long overdue, and let's keep praying for this peace summit taking place in Alaska on Friday between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Thank you very much, Andrew. Back to you.
Thank you, Peter. Now, the skeptics would look at the fact that from 2014, when the real war started, as you said, 14,000 Ukrainians were slaughtered by their own government, or rather, they were people living in the Donbass.
Yes.
And seemed to be loyal to Russia. The world did nothing, but importantly, Putin didn't do anything until 2022. And the skeptics would say, obviously, something very similar happened that kicked off World War II, which was Germans living in Poland were being slaughtered by the Polish authorities or what have you. The world did nothing, and Hitler sent Germans in to protect these Germans. Why didn't Putin send anyone in for 8 years? And that's the first question. And the second question is, the real skeptics out there might look at the war itself being a very old-fashioned type of war, like the trench warfare of the Battle of the Somme. It seems to be like a meat grinder, almost as if the war was designed to decimate the Ukrainian population in order to free up the land for another population that might be looking to move in and replace them. But what are your thoughts on those two points?
Those are very important points to bring up. And yes, I do believe that the powers that be, or should we say the powers that should not be, are using the Ukraine war very much like the Great Reset demands, when you will own nothing and you will be happy. So remember, who can forget, 2020 and 2021 was dominated by the COVID cult, the masquerade madness, the lockdown lunacy, the salvation by vaccination COVID cult, which so disrupted our lives. And at that point, the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, were saying, this is the beginning of the Great Reset. In fact, Klaus Schwab even authored the book, The Great Reset. And they were believing that they could use this pandemic panic paranoia in order to bring control over the world's population for globalism. The globalists want centralization. They want to take all power and all independence away from all of us so that we are dependent on the state, which in this case is a United Nations type of state, a globalist state. They want a classless world society for world communism, where the family is basically broken and the communities are smashed. And international superstates of globalists are running the whole show. And by 2022, the COVID cult was running out of steam. Individual gullibility and support was eroding. People were getting fed up. There's more and more resistance and demands to end. And almost seamlessly, it was like, okay, the COVID lockdown's going to end. But the next thing to dominate the media, and it was almost seamless. You know, 1 week it was all COVID, COVID, COVID. And then next week it was Russia, 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 Ukraine war, and so on. And I think that the war in Ukraine was designed to bring about a great collapse in preparation for the global reset. They tried through the COVID cult. They failed, although they certainly made a lot of damage to the world's economy, ruined a lot of people's lives and businesses with the lockdown lunacy. But the war in Ukraine was, I think, designed to expand. And it's only because of restraint by Russia and the intervention by President Donald Trump coming in at the beginning of this year that has stopped this war escalating into what could have easily been a more regional conflict involving all of Europe and possibly even a nuclear war between the superpowers of the United States and the Soviet Union. And of course, Britain and France also have nuclear weapons, so that would be in the mix too. So we could be in a much worse situation, and we can be grateful that the Ukraine war has failed to involve the whole of Europe and America into a more regional world war, because World War III was probably on the cards, was probably part of the plan of these globalists. And we were so close. We can be super grateful that they are planning peace to break out this Friday in Alaska, about time. But yes, why did Putin not act earlier? And well, that shows he couldn't have been the aggressor that everyone was thinking, because he had all the reason to get involved already back in 2014. And my Ukrainian friends were saying, and I've still got the letters, they were absolutely rejoicing that at last somebody is speaking up for us, somebody cares, somebody's getting involved, and you know, Vladimir Putin's doing something for us in Donbass region, where the Russians who were thrown away by Stalin and forced into Ukraine, and now we're trying to get out, and nobody's been helping us. So I think Russia was doing some backdoor help, but not much. More like a bit of a charity and humanitarian help with some blankets and medicines and things like that. But I don't think they were getting a significant amount of weapons. All the weapons they had in Donbass is what they captured from the Ukrainian army. So it was a real resistance movement, and they were desperately wanting Russia's help. But Russia did not want to appear the aggressor, and they were trying to resolve the conflict in Ukraine peacefully and by negotiations. But of course, as you know, the Biden administration, which now we know was a fake administration, which had stolen the election 2020, the evidence there is huge. But now Vladimir Putin was exhausted by February of 2022 by the obstructionism and the blatant aggression of the Biden administration, America, and the manipulative activities of NATO and the EU. And so the globalists tried to start a great collapse, which could have led to the great reset that they keep advocating. So I do think the globalists have lost their intended escalation and aggravation of this war. Just, I think the whole Ukraine war was designed by the globalists to be the great collapse that would lead to the great reset. And therefore, we can be super grateful that cooler heads have preserved, because there was a Russian article a while ago, Alexander Dugin, who's a real philosopher in Russia, he said, the West is being run by demon-possessed leaders. And I think that that's a very insightful analysis, because so many things being done by Western leaders are so illogical, so counterproductive, that you have to consider the possibility that supernatural evil is involved here, that there are demons influencing and guiding, if not in many cases possessing, many of the leaders in the West. And you can just see it in so many of the policies and the anti-Christian hysteria and paranoia that you can see, just how they could lock down churches during the COVID cult, for example, but not abortion clinics, not the drug stores. They weren't closing down the big shops, just the small ones. And the casinos could be open, the abortion clinics could be open, but the churches had to be closed. That kind of insane behavior. And you can see so many bizarre things where they will want to tell you, trust the science, while they're telling you that there's more than two genders. And, just the bizarre nonsense that we were expected to believe, you can just see there's something evil about our Western society, just like taking children and mutilating them and calling it gender-affirming care. When you're castrating, doing mastectomies, teenagers, sterilizing young people. And this was absolutely epidemic at one stage. Just remember how bizarre it was all going. And then suddenly common sense came back in the person of Donald Trump, and we were very grateful for being told there's only two genders now, and we're going to stop all this so-called surgery, which was mutilation of kids, to advance a very radical agenda. So, yes, the people in eastern Ukraine see things very differently from most people in the West. They see the war having started in 2014, and they were wondering why Putin was taking so long to come and help them. And, you know, they're Russian people. They were ethnically, geographically, historically, they were culturally Russian. They belonged to the Russian Orthodox Church. And here it took the Russian government so long to come to their support. And one has to ask, why did they take so long? Well, it certainly negates the narrative that Vladimir Putin was trying to restore the Tsarist Empire and restore the Soviet Union. He's an aggressor who wants to invade all of Europe. And, you know, the Russian tanks are going to be in Paris soon and all that sort of thing. This kind of hysteria is proven to be false by the fact that he took so long to respond to this Ukrainian aggression against Russian people in neighboring Donbass. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. And before we go, can you please let the audience know where they can find your work and how they can contact you?
Yes, please visit www.frontlinemissionsa.org. Frontlinemissionsa.org is the website. My personal email is peter@frontline.org.za. peter@frontline.org.za is the email. frontlinemissionsa.org is the website. And we also have on Facebook as well.
Thank you so much, Peter. Okay, that concludes today's presentation, the real story of the end of the Ukrainian war. I want to thank all of you for joining Peter and I today. We will return with you in 2 weeks' time. I'll be back with you all on Saturday. And until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week, and bye for now.